All right, good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf is Kuf Mem Ches, but we are going to start on Kuf Mem Zayin Amud Beis. So we have a lot to do today. So the Gemara says the following. So we're starting with Amar Rabbi Chelbo. It's 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16 lines up from the bottom. Amar Rabbi Chelbo, Chamra de Parugisa Umaya de Diumeses Kipchu Aseret Shvatim. Rabbi Chelbo says that it was the wine of Parugisa. The wine of Parugisa and the waters of Diumeses that took away the 10 Shvatim, which Rabbi Chelbo is saying is that the reason why the 10 Shvatim ultimately were exiled was because they got too carried away with Gashmius, they got too carried away with earthly physical pleasures, specifically the wine of Parugisa and the healing waters of the Diumeses River. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Elazar ben Arach ikla lahasam. So the Gemara tells a story. Rabbi Elazar ben Arach went to Parugisa. What happened? So he says, the Gemara says, Imshich Basrayu. He got very carried away with the wine of Parugisa and the waters of the Umeses. And as a result, Iakar Talmudei, he forgot all of his learning. So what happened? Ki Hadar, when he came back, wherever he was coming back to, right? When he was coming back to his home city, Kam Lemikre Besifra, they gave him an aliyah. Boy Lemikra, and remember again, the Gemara is talking about the situation where if you got the aliyah, you lane the aliyah as well. So he got up through the aliyah, and he got the aliyah of HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem, and Parshas Bo, right? Mitzvah Kiddush HaChodesh. And when he read it, he says, Amar HaChoresh Haya Liban. He couldn't even read the words correctly, and so he read HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem, HaChoresh Haya Liban. Now, of course, this is a very meaningful mistake, because HaChoresh Haya Liban means their heart became deaf and mute. So again, ultimately, for really referencing what had happened to Rabbi Elazar ben Arach himself, the rabbis realized that he had forgotten everything. Bo Rabbanan Rachami Alei V'Hadir Talmudei. The rabbis davened for him, and his learning returned. V'Hainu Dislan Rabbi Norai, and this is what Rabbi Norai used to teach, Rabbi Norai Omer, Havigala L'Makom Torah. Make sure that wherever you go, even if you go to a faraway place, you settle in a place of Torah. Va'al tomar shehi tavo acharecha. And don't think that Torah will follow you. Shechaverecha yikaimuha biyadecha. Because it's only your friends, it's only your good peer group that will make sure that your Torah remains in your hands. Va'al binascha al tish'an. And never rely solely on your own intellect. Right, and we'll say, so again, Rabbi Norai, based on Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, here was a great Talmud Chacham, but he went off on his own. Because he went off on his own, ultimately, over time, he forgot all of his learning. So the Gemara says, Tana, lo Rabbi Nehorai Shmo, el Rabbi Nehemiah Shmo. So some say it wasn't Rabbi Nehorai who taught this ruling, rather it was Rabbi Nehemiah. Ra'amilei, Rabbi Elazar ben Arach Shmo. Others say, you know who taught this ruling? The very person to whom it happened. It was Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, the one who went off on his own and forgot all of his Torah learning, was the one who said, have a gola l'makom Torah. So the Gemara said, v'lama nikra shmo Rabbi Nehorai. So if it was really Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, then why was he called Rabbi Nehorai? Sheman hir eini chachamim b'halocha. Because he illuminated the eyes of his fellow chachamim in halocha. Avalomis garim. So we'll say again, if you remember, the Mishnah said that you may not scrape skin on Shabbos. Tan Rabbanan in gorim b'migreres. You can't go in and scrape the skin with the scraping utensil b'Shabbos. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, "Imhayu raglav meluchlachos betit ubitzah gorer kedargo." So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, "But if your feet were covered with tit, with dirt, with mud, with some kind of dirt, with schmutz, you can go ahead and scrape it off in a normal fashion. The inner choshesh, and that is not viewed as scraping skin." Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda of delay ime migarerasa de kaspa. So Marjus tells us over there, Shmuel bar Yehuda, his mother made him a silver scraping instrument that again was not used on Shabbos. Well, Rashi actually points out, excuse me, just the opposite. Migarerasa lish Shabbos. It was used for Shabbos. But Pashas, what he used it for was the scraping away of dirt and not just stand the scraping of skin. So the Gemara goes right there. Ein Yordin le Kordima. You can't go into the Kordima River. So the Gemara says, my time, what's the reason? Mishum Pika. Because of Pika, Rashi says, Mishum Pika, Tit shel Osanar. You can't go because of the mud. What does that mean? Machlik ubigde ha'adam nishur b'mayin kushunopa v'asli de'ischida. So apparently the banks of the Kordima River are very slippery. Therefore, again, it's almost certain that you're going to slip going down. Your clothing is going to get wet. and therefore there's a concern that you're going to wring out the clothing over the course of Shabbos. Ve'ein osin apik toizin b'Shabbos. You can't make this mixture that you would drink that would induce vomiting. Amrav Abrachana Amrav Yochanan Lo Shana Ela B'Sam. When do we say that you can't induce vomiting on Shabbos? That you can't drink something that's going to induce vomiting. Rashi says Ela B'Sam Didami L'Refua U'Gzir Mishum Srikas Samimanim. So apparently drinking something that will induce vomiting falls under the prohibition of medicinal healing on Shabbos. Aval Biyad Mutter. But if you want to go ahead and cause yourself to vomit by putting your finger down your throat, then that you can do on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, "Tanya, I mean, Chem Yomer, Chem. So what are you talking about? Af bechol aser. You can't do that even during the week. Why? Mishum hefsid ochlin. Ultimately, because bal tashkes. Now, I'll say the reason people often induced vomiting was to be able to eat more. So therefore, again, Rabbi Nechemiah says you can't even do that during the week because of hefsed ochlin, because of baltashkes with food. Rashi says hefsed ochlin shebemeyav. You're causing the loss of the food in your stomach. People would do this in order to go out and become hungry and to be able to eat more. So the Gemara says you can't do that because ultimately of baltashkes. Ve'in ma'asvin asakotam. You can't go ahead and Nasas can literally means you can't straighten out the child. Amar Rabbi Bar Bachan, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Lefufe Yenuka B'Shabbes Shapir Dami. You can wrap a child in a blanket on Shabbos. Now Rashi says over here, it's not just wrapping a blanket. Rashi says Lefufe Kimo She'osin LeKatan She'es Yashuv Eivra V'Lo Yis'akin. So what they often did when a baby was born is they would wrap the baby tight in a blanket to assure that the limbs were straight. You do that on Shabbos. Simar says, but we learned over here in the Mishnah that you can't straighten out the bones of the baby on Shabbos. To which the Gemara says, Hasam bechumre deshidra. What the Mishnah is talking about over here is arranging the spinal vertebrae. Rashi says, bechumre shidra, chuyo shal shidra shen esparka achas mehem. So we'll say, listen to this. So what it's talking about over here is kind of arranging, doing something to straighten the spinal cord, the vertebrae on Shabbos. This is not talking about a baby that's born, it's talking about a child that's already a little bit older. That you can't do on Shabbos. Again, obviously assuming there's no sakana. So right, that you can't do on Shabbos. Why? Because interestingly enough, the Gemara says, helping to arrange the vertebrae in the spinal cord is mechse kibona. Actually has the appearance of building on Shabbos. So assuming that it's not sakranos nefashos, one can't do that on Shabbos. But the act of going ahead and wrapping the baby, swaddling the baby tight when the baby's born, says the Gemara is absolutely no problem on Shabbos. Ve'in machzir nas hashever. You can't set a broken bone on Shabbos. Amar Rabbi Chana bagara to Amar Shmuel. So Rabbi Chana bagara to send the name of Shmuel, the following halacha, tav of kof memchez. Halacha Machzir in Esas Shever b'Shabbos. Esas Shever. So the halacha is, we paskin, that you can set a broken bone on Shabbos. Rashi says over here, halacha machzir Esas Shever, Svir Lishul machzir in Esas Shever. So again, the way that the Rambam and others understand this halacha is because there's a concern that not to set the bone on Shabbos could cause a sakonas aver, could cause a danger to the limb. And a danger to the limb always poses a potential sakonas nefashos. So because this is a potential sakonas nefashos, albeit a far removed potential sakonas nefashos, remember for Shabbos, we are careful even with the most remote sakana. So because again, broken bone could pose a danger to the limb could pose a danger to the body, we allow you to set the broken bone on Shabbos. Rabba Barachana ikul pumpadisas. Listen to this. Rabba Barachana went to Pumpadisa. Right, Pumpadisa was one of the major cities in Bavel, Torah cities in Bavel. Lo al pirkei de Rabbi Yehuda. See, he didn't come to the Shir Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is one of the major Torah personalities in Pumbedisa. Rabbi Barachana comes to the city, and he chooses not to come to the Shir. He doesn't come to the Shir. Okay, so what happened? Rabbi Yehuda, now we're going to suppose it just to understand, Rabbi Yehuda wasn't upset about this, but Rabbi Yehuda wanted Rabbi Barachana to come to the Shir for reasons that we'll see in just a little bit. So what did he do? Shadre la Ado Dailo. He sent Ado, his servant, his Misharis, Amrlei, Zil Garbe, and he said to Ado, go and seize the cloak of Rabbi Barachana. And essentially to Rabbi Barachana, if he wants his cloak back, he's got to come to the shir. He's got to come to the shir of Rabbi Yehuda. It's a good way to get people to come to shir. So Garbe, so Ado goes and he seizes the cloak of Rabbi Barachana. Asa. Okay, so what is Rabbi Baruch Hanan going to do? So he comes to the Beis Medrash, he comes to the Shir, and what happens? Ashkichei dekadarish. And he heard Rabbi Yehuda was giving a Shir. And what was the topic of the Shir? Ein machzirin es ha-shever. The topic of the Shir was, we don't set broken bones on Shabbos. Amrlei, so Rabbi Yehuda is saying this, so Rabbi Baruch Hanan says, Hochi Amar Rav Chana Bagarito Amar Shmuel. So Rabbi Yehuda says, excuse me, Rabbi Baruch Hanan says, it's interesting because Rav Chana Bagarito, which Bepashas means of Baghdad, Rav Chana of Baghdad and Shmuel both say, Machzirin Es HaShever. They both paskin, you can't set a broken bone. Amar Lei. So Rabbi Yehuda responds, ah, Chana Didanu, Vaha Shmuel Didanu. What's interesting is, Rav Chana Bagarito is originally from Pompadisa. Shmuel's originally from Pompadisa. These are two homegrown Talmidei Chachamim. Velo Shmuelei. And I never heard these halachic positions. So Rabbi Yehuda turns to Rabbi Baruch Hanan and he says, now, Belav Bedina Gabaticha. Do you not understand now why I seized your cloak? Right? So what Rabbi Yehuda was saying to Rabbi Baruch Hanan is, I wanted you to come to the Shir because, again, I knew that you had Torah that we did not have here in Pompadisa. The only way I was able to get you is to seize your cloak. But again, Rabbi Yehuda was thanking Rabbi Baruch Hanan for coming, because he told them about the shitos of Shmuel and Rav Chana that Rav Yehuda was until now unfamiliar with. Misha nifrika yado. So somebody dislocated their hand. So the Mishnah said that you're not permitted to rinse it, to massage it under cold water on Shabbos. But what you can do is you can go about your regular activities, and if it goes back into place, it goes back into place. So the Gemara says, Rav Avya, havi yosef kamid Rav Yosef. Rav Avya was sitting before Rav Yosef. Shangile yodei. His hand became dislocated. Amrle hachi mai. So Rav Yosef, so apparently Rav Avya then began to ask Rav Yosef a whole series of things of, what can I do to relocate? To alleviate the pain, right? What could I do? What do they call the process of putting it back?
Putting it back.
All right. Is that called relocating?
No.
Dislocating?
Resetting.
Oh, yeah. All right, whatever. Putting it back. Right, what can I do? What can I do to go ahead and reset it? So the Gemara says, Osir. So apparently, what the Gemara doesn't tell us what Rav Avya did, but Rav Avya showed Rav Yosef something that he wanted to do. Rav Yosef said he can't do it. Vahachima, he tried something else. Amrli Osir. Adahachi, while all of this is going on, Itbach Yadeh. I guess because of the movements or different things that he was doing, the hand went back into place. Okay, Baruch Hashem. Amrli Maiti Boilacha. So we'll say, what's interesting is, Rabbi Yosef says to Rav Avya, why, I don't understand your question. Why do you think that you'd be able to go ahead and put your hand back into place after all, hatnan, misha nifrika yada oraglo, lo yitrafein betzoni? The Mishnah explicitly says that if somebody dislocated their hand or their foot, you can't massage it under cold water. Aval rocheitz kidarko, but you could wash the way you normally wash. Nisrape, and if it heals, it heals. So what Rav Avi was asking, Rav Avi was, I don't understand why you were asking me. Meaning the Mishnah is pretty explicit in terms of what you can do and what you can't do. So what was the nature of your Shaila? So Rav Avi responds, Amrle, below Tanan, in Machzir Nes HaShever, but yet it's that same Mishnah that says that you can't set a broken bone. So the reason I thought, sort of obviously, the reason I thought maybe the halacha is different by a dislocated hand is because, again, the Mishnah also said you can't set a broken bone. And yet what? Rav Chana and Shmuel both said what? That you can. So I thought that maybe just like Rav Chana and Shmuel said that you could reset a broken bone, even though the Mishnah says you can't, I thought maybe there was another ruling by helping with a dislocated hand as well, to which Rav Yosef responds, Amar Lei, Kulhu Bechada Mechisa Machtinu. Was the entire Mishnah woven in the same weave? Hecha de Itmar Itmar, Hecha de Lo Itmar Lo Itmar. So essentially what Rav Yosef responds is, listen, just because there was an additional ruling by the case of setting the broken bone, do you think that means that there's an additional ruling by every single case in the Mishnah? No. Right? Where there's an additional ruling stated, it's stated. But where there's no additional ruling stated, then the statement of the Mishnah remains, and if Ra'aloch Lamaisa, you can't go ahead and actively try to put back into place the dislocated hand or foot. Hadron Aloch Chavis.
You're not wringing it out with a towel. What's wrong with
the Tikkun Mana, the issue is it has the appearance of fixing, like binyan, putting something back into place. Gzirat Rabbanon. Gzirat Rabbanon, plus it also borders on certain issues regarding refuah. So it's definitely a Drabbanon. No Torah involved over here, but either Drabbanon of Bona, Drabbanon of refuah. Hadron Aloch Chobis. Says the Mishnah, Shoel Oda Mechavero, Kade Yayin Vikade Shem. So we'll say, now the Mishnah goes into a very interesting discussion about borrowing things on Shabbos. The topic over here now is going to be Mekach u'Memkar, things that have the appearance of business dealings on Shabbos. But I will say, the problem with engaging in transactions on Shabbos is a fear. We'll see two possibilities. Either possibility one is that on Shabbos, the way you conduct yourself has to be different than the way you conduct yourself during the week. And since during the week we make all kinds of transactions, Shabbos, we don't do that. That's one possibility. Second possibility is a little bit more fine-tuned, which is that there's a fear that if you engage in different transactions, that could lead to ksiva, that could lead to writing. Since often transactions are recorded in writing, therefore Chazal did not want you to engage anything that could lead one to writing on Shabbos. So therefore the Mishnah says the following, Shoel Adam Mechavero, Kade Yain Vekade Shemen. A person could go ahead and borrow from his friend, barrels or jugs of oil and jugs of wine. Ubilvad shelo yomar lo halaveni. As long as he doesn't say, lend them to me. Okay. We'll discuss what he's supposed to say then. V'chena isha mechaver tach kikaros. So a woman could borrow loaves of bread from her friend. But again, as long as she doesn't say what? As long as she doesn't say, lend me the loaves. Then eno ma'amino, aye, but what happens if, so we'll say this all works fine and dandy if what? If you trust the person who's taking the items from you, then you trust the individual to go ahead and what? To go ahead and pay you for it after Shabbos. But what happens if you don't trust the person? Maniach taliso etzlo, ba'ose imo cheshbon achar Shabbos. So let's say again, when we say don't trust, lav dafka means don't trust, it just means, let's say the person doesn't know me. Right? So I want to go ahead, I need a jug of wine for Shabbos. So I can't say to the individual, lend it to me, so he's going to give it to me. With the understanding, of course, that we're going to settle up after Shabbos. What happens if he doesn't know me? I could leave my cloak with him. Or else I could leave a collateral, I could leave something there, and I'll come back after Shabbos and we'll settle up after Shabbos. V'chin Erev Pesach b'Yerushalayim. So too of Erev Pesach in Yerushalayim, Shechalios b'Shabbos. So we'll say again, remember, people often bought their Karban Pesach on Erev Shabbos. So what do I do now? If again, I should have bought my Karban Pesach on Friday. Let's say I didn't, so I need to get the animal now this morning. So what do I do? Maniach tal iso etzlo, benotel es pischo. So I go to the animal merchant, I go out, I take the animal, I leave my talis with him, v'ose imo cheshbon la'achar yomtiv. And then I come back to the merchant after yomtiv and I settle up with him. Says the Gemara, Amar li Rabba bar Rav Chanan la Abaye, Maishna hashileni, umaishna halaveni. So here's what's interesting. So Rabba bar Rav Chanan says to Abaye, so the Mishnah obviously says that a person can't use the word halaveni. They can't use the word lend to me, but you can use the word, again, the fact that the Mishnah says he can't use halaveni indicates that what? That hashileni should be okay. The truth is, they both translate somewhat similarly, right? Halaveni literally means lend to me, let me borrow, as opposed to hashileni, which means halaveni means lend to me, whereas hashileni means let me borrow. But the truth is, they both kind of translate in English, at least the same way. What's the distinction between them? Amrle hashileni lo asi lemichtov. If a person uses the transactional lashon of hashileni, we're not concerned about the fact that the vendor is going to write down something, or flatafka the vendor, that the person who's giving the object is going to write down the transaction. Haleveni, asi lemichtov. But if you use the lashon of haleveni, you'll come to write. Now why? Look at Rashi. It's the first Rashi in the Gemara. It's not labeled. Rashi says, haleveni, mashma lizman meruba. Oh, the difference is that the lashon of haleveni, although both mean to lend to me, to borrow, haleveni means long-term, hashileni means short-term. What's the difference? The difference is that people often record long-term debt. Why? Because they don't want to forget it. So therefore, again, the Mishnah says you can't, if you're going to borrow something on Shabbos, you can only take it short term. You have to say the lashon of Hashileni. Therefore, again, the person is confident they could remember it, and therefore there's no fear that they're going to come to write it. But if you say Halaveni, that means long term, and then there's a concern that the person maybe going to commit the transaction to writing. So the Gemara says Vaha. Kevan de bechol zinin de boy le meimar le halabeni. Ramar le hashileni velo kapit iluye. Vasi le michtav. Beshavis nami asi le michtav. But the Gemara says, 1 second. But if you look at during the week, right? The Gemara says, during the week, we're not makbid on the lashon. Right? During the week, sometimes when I mean halabeni, I say hashileni. Sometimes when I say hashileni, I say halabeni. And what happens during the week? People always commit things to writing. So you see from here that just because you use a particular lashon, that should not go ahead and obviate the concern for writing it down. To which the Gemara says, "Amalei bichol de loshna, ki amalei halaveni loshna, ki amalei hashileni lo kapdinan iluye asila michtav." B'Shabbos, kevan da hashileni hu deshar rabbanan halaveni lo shar rabbanan min kara milsa v'lo asila michtav. So Gemara says, "Einachinami, you're right. During the week, where no one is mapping on what type of loshen they use, whether it's hashileni or halaveni, then okay, I understand. You're right. A person's going to come to write down all of the transactions, but on Shabbos." Where Chazal said a person has to be makbid to go ahead and use the right kind of lashon, then when a person dafka says hashileni and not halaveni, a person will know that this is short term, and therefore a person will know that they don't have to write down the transaction. Amalei Rava Barav Chanan La Abaye Michti Amar Ravanan. The rabbi said, Kol Mili Di Yom Tov. Anything that any matters of Yom Tov, anything that you have to do on Yom Tov. So the Gemara goes off on a little bit of a tangent. So Chazal said that on Yom Tov, whenever you do something, whenever you do a labor-like activity, the greater the shinui you could employ, the better. The more you mishana, the better. So the Gemara says, for example, Hani Nashi Demalian Chatzbayu Maya, my time lo mishani. So if that's the case, why is it that when the women fill up their buckets of water on Yom Tov, why do they do it the same way they do it during the week? Why don't they do it with some kind of shinui? So the Gemara says, well, what exactly would you want them to do? So the Gemara says, mishum dolo efshar, because in reality there is no way for them to do a shinui in this case. Why? Heichel le'avde. So what should they do? Le'malyon b'chatz b'rabba limlu b'chatz b'zuta. If you want to say that, whereas they normally use large buckets, so perhaps on Yom Tov they should use smaller buckets. Ha kamavshi behelucha. What's going to end up happening? They're going to end up doing more work. Why? Because they're going to have to go back and forth to the well more times. On the other hand, maybe you'll say demalion bechatz bazuta limna bechatz baraba. Or maybe you'll say those who use small buckets should use large buckets. Cut down on the number of trips. No, kamavshi b'masli. Right? Then you make the actual load heavier. I'm sorry? She needs to get just the Einachinami, right? There are certain things the Gemara doesn't even entertain. Right? So Nifros Sudra, a different society. Nifros Sudra, so maybe you should go ahead and put a cloth on top of the bucket. Asili de Schita. It's concerned that the cloth is going to become what? You'll come to do Schita. Nichsie Binech Tama. Go ahead, maybe you should cover it with a covering. Zinnin da mifsak, maybe the covering will become detached. Vasil miktere, and you may come to tie it on, which of course could be an issue of an av malach of kosher. Hilchach lo efshar. Therefore, we see that what? There is no real way to do a shinui with filling up the buckets on Yom Tov. Okay. Va'armale Rava Barav Chanan la'abaye. So Rava said, Rava Barav Chanan said, Tanan, we also learned, lo misapkin velo mitapkin velo miraktin b'Yom Tov. You cannot go ahead and clap. That's mesapkin. Metapkin means, you know, hitting against your chest. And meraktin, dancing on Yom Tov. You can't do any of these things on Yom Tov. Rashi says over here, meraktin l'simcha. You can't dance a simcha on Yom Tov. Why? V'taimam mefarish v'mesechas beitza, shem yitakin klei shir. Because out of a concern that if one's clapping or one's dancing or this rhythmic beating against one's chest, one's going to come to go ahead and either fix or create instruments, which should obviously be malacha on Shabbos. The Gemara says, V'haka chazinan de'avdin. But people do it. It's a fascinating Gemara. But people do it. Yeah. So, okay. All right, if we have time, we'll come back to this. So, people do it. And yet, we don't say anything to them. right? So we see people, mamish people are dancing in the streets and right on Yom Tov, and we don't say anything to stop them. Ulatameich, but according to this logic, right? According to this same reasoning, Hada Amar Rava. Rava also said, Lo leisiv inish apuma delechira. So we just had this actually a couple of days ago. A person should not sit at the entranceway of a mavoi under the lechi, right, or by the lechi. So I remember we spoke about this earlier. A mavoi is an alleyway that right, you have multiple courtyards that open up into an alleyway. An alleyway is still considered to be Rosh Hashayachid, but because it resembles Rosh Sarabim in certain ways, so again, we restrict some mobility in it. But what's important for our purposes over here is we need to make some kind of recognizable distinction between the mavoi and the Rosh Sarabim, because people will think that if they could carry in the mavoi, that they could carry into Rosh Sarabim as well. So what do? At the entranceway, we put a lechi or a korah, either a vertical or a horizontal beam, that's pretty much there to serve as a reminder that this is where the lechi ends. So the Gemara says a person should not sit right essentially by the lechi, by the entranceway of the mavoi, out of the concern that what? Dilma misnagdar lechefetz, because maybe a utensil, an item, will roll out. And what will happen? We'll say, if I'm sitting right by the entranceway of the mavoi, and something drops out of my hand and rolls out to Rabim, so I, without thinking, what do? I reach out and pull it back in, which obviously, again, is going to be a problem for Tzohan Shabbos. V'holka chazina nami demosvi, chatzvi v'yasana puma demubal, v'lo amrina lohu amu v'lo miti. But yet we see that what? People sit by the entranceway of the mavoi all the time, and yet what? We don't say anything. To which the Gemara says something very interesting. Ella, hanach liYisrael, leave the Jewish people alone. Mutav shiv shogigin v'ayu mezidin. It is better for people to be unintentional violators than to be intentional violators. So we'll say, this is a very interesting yisod. So the Gemara seems to be saying over here is the following, that there are certain things that if you tell people, they're not going to listen anyway. So if they're not going to listen anyway, you're better off letting them think that what they're doing is permitted. And this way, again, at least when they violate it, it's unintentional. Then to tell them it's wrong, and they're going to violate it anyway, and this, now what? Now knowing that what they're doing is truly wrong. So we'll say it's interesting. Now, what's, of course, the common denominator among both of these things is what? Hani Mili, the Gemara says, excuse me, Savar Mine, Hani Mili B'dirabonon, Ava B'dorayisa Lo. So we'll say, obviously, the common denominator among these two cases of the clapping and dancing and the sitting by the mavo is that they're both Dirabonons. So Dirabonon have the right to say, you know what? If something is so problematic for people, people are violating this particular rabbinic edict, you're right, leave it alone. But bepashas, that would not apply to a doraisa, to which the Gemara says, velohi, not necessarily, lo shna b'drabanan, velo shna b'doraisa. It's not, the Gemara says, there's no difference in a drabanan, no difference in a doraisa, meaning that if we see that people are in violation of something, and we judge that even if we tell them they're still going to keep on doing it, Mutav shu shogigin ba'ayu mezidin. So the Gemara says, what's the proof? Listen to this. Daha tosef es yom kippurim da'oraisihi. Because again, we see that adding on to Yom Kippur, Rabbi said, which means starting Yom Kippur early, is the chi of da'oraisa. Right? That's why, again, we don't start Yom Kippur at nightfall. We start Yom Kippur like when Shabbos, already before Shkia. And yet, what do we see? V'kachazina lei deka'achli b'shasu ad she'techshach. And yet we see that what? People are eating and drinking until nightfall. And yet, we don't say anything to them. So you see over here that what? That mutav shu shogigin va'ayu mezidin applies to the oraisas as well. So Rabbi say again, the way Paskin la halacha, this is not really one psak halacha, this is a case-by-case situation. However, again, there's always a very fine line. Because there's also a mitzvah hochech tochech asamisecha, of rebuking your fellow when you see them doing something wrong. So it is a very delicate dance in life to know when to go ahead and point out to someone or to a collective that something is being done wrong, with the hope of having them engage in course-correcting activity versus recognizing that no change is going to occur and therefore better off letting people be unintentional sinners than intentional sinners. Okay? Dechein isha mechaverta kikaros. Remember again, the Mishnah also said that if a woman wants to go out and borrow loaves of bread from her friend on Shabbos, she could do that, but again, she can't use the lashon of hilvani or halaveni. So the Gemara says the following, b'shabbos u'da'asir, It's interestingly enough, it's only on Shabbos where the borrowing of the loaves could be potentially problematic. But apparently, and that's only because of using the lashon of halaveni. But during the week, apparently, this practice is fine. So the Gemara says, "Lema masnis in the loki hilal." This mishnah apparently does not affect the view of hilal. This non. The chin hayo hilal omer. Hilal said the following: Lo tal the isha kika lachaverta. A woman should not lend a loaf of bread to a friend. Ad sheta asena damin. Until she what? Until she attaches a monetary value to the loaf of bread. Why? Shemayuk ruchitin, because maybe wheat will go up in value. Vinimtsa ba'osli de ribis, and they'll come to an issue of interest. So Zabosai, this is very interesting. Namely what? So Hillel says, Zabosai, if you borrow a loaf of bread, so as much as you think to yourself, I'm going to borrow a loaf of bread, I'll give you back a loaf of bread. So remember, the loaf of bread that you give back may not be the loaf of bread that you borrowed. How so? Let's say when I borrowed the loaf of bread, the loaf of bread was $2. And then wheat, there was a spike in wheat. And now what happens? Loaf of bread is worth $5. Hillel says, that's ribbis. That's an interest issue. Therefore, Hillel says, whenever you borrow something that has a fluctuating value, what you should do is assign a monetary amount to the object or evaluate the object you are borrowing. So in essence, according to Hillel, when I borrow a loaf of bread, I'm not borrowing a loaf of bread. What am I borrowing? I'm borrowing $2. And so again, if the loaf of bread, if the price of the loaf of bread remains constant, that's fine, I can give back a loaf of bread also. But if for some reason there's a fluctuation, I give the person back $2. The fact that the Mishnah says that you're borrowing loaves and giving back loaves would seem not to reflect the view of Hillel. To which the Gemara says, no, not necessarily. Afilu tema Hillel, could even be Hillel. Ha asra de kitz dame, ha ba asra de lo kitz dame. Different locales had different customs. In certain locales, they had fixed prices for something that they tried, that did not fluctuate, even with differing values. So in a city where the prices were set, so then in Achinami, if you borrow a loaf, you can give back a loaf. When Hillel said what he said, he was talking about a place in which there were not necessarily set values, prices would fluctuate in accordance with the valuation of different items. And that's what Hillel says, you should make sure to assign a value to the item you are borrowing. And if you don't believe, right, so again, now let's say I want the loaves of bread, or I want whatever it is, but the vendor doesn't know me, or the vendor doesn't trust me, maybe one, either one, so what do? I leave my talis, I leave my cloak with the vendor, and I come back after Shabbos, and you settle up like that. So the Gemara says the following. Itmar, halva'as Yom Tov, when it comes to a loan made on Yom Tov. Now again, I will say, lav dafka, this is a loan. We'll have to read a little bit more. So if a loan is made on Yom Tov, Rav Yosef Amar lo nitna litava, Rav Yosef says it's not really collectible, Rava Amar nitna litava, and Rava says it is collectible. Now what does this mean? Look at Rashi. Lo nitna litava bebezdin. She'in bezdin is kakin la li'ol. So we'll say the question is, if I go ahead and I take something on credit, right? So now, does the vendor or does the lender have an enforceable debt against me or not? Can they take me to Beis Din or not? So interestingly enough, Rav Yosef says no. Rabba says yes. What's the logic here? Rav Yosef Amar Lo Nitna Litava. Rav Yosef says this is not a collectible debt in Beis Din. Why? Di'i Amrit Nitna Litava Asila Michtav. Because right, what's going to happen? If you say that it's an enforceable debt, what's going to occur? Right, the person's going to write it down. Person compared it, which is that we're trying to avoid. Rabba Amr Nitna Litava. Rabba says it has to be collectible. Why? Di'i Amrit Lo Nitna Lo Yahivle Va'asilim Nimisim Chasyonto. I will say people are nice, but people are not that nice. I said, if you tell me again that I'm going to go ahead and give someone to credit, I'm extending to someone on credit, and the only way I'm going to get paid is if they're nice enough, kind enough, generous enough to pay me, but I have absolutely no enforceability. A lot of people are not going to extend credit. In which case, what's going to happen? There's going to be a diminution of people. Some people are not going to have what they need for Yantiv. So the Gemara says, Tanan. So we'll say, fundamental machlokes. So, and again, each one is trying to preserve the sanctity of Yom Tov. That's the interesting part over here. So Rav Yosef is trying to preserve the sanctity of Yom Tov because if we tell you that it's enforceable, people will record the debt in writing, violate Yom Tov. Rabba, on the other hand, says, we're trying to preserve the sanctity of Yom Tov because if it's not enforceable, people aren't going to lend. If people aren't going to lend, people won't have what they need for Yom Tov. So Tanan, so the Gemara quotes the Mishnah. Eino ma'amino. So what does the Mishnah say? If the lender does not believe me in terms of my willingness to pay back, maniach taliso etzlo. I leave my talis with him. So that makes sense if you say that a loan or a debt from Yom Tov is not really collectible in Beis Din. That's why I have to leave my cloak. Because leaving my cloak does what Rabbi Osai? Gives the lender leverage to get me to pay. But if again, if you tell me that a Yom Tov debt is collectible and Beis Din, why do I have to leave my cloak there? After all, if I don't pay, the vendor could always take me to Beis Din. Very simply, Omer, lo ba'ina deleko medina v'dayna. Because the vendor could always say, I don't want to go through the process of going to Beis Din. Right? I understand that I have an enforceable debt. I don't want to have to go to the to that. I don't want to have to go through those that process. Therefore, again, leave the cloak here with me, and that gives me the leverage to collect the debt. So the Gemara goes weiter. I'm sorry? So the Mishnah over here, is phrased as both, again, Shabbos and Yom Tov. The Brice that the Gemara is quoting over here, the Machlokes of Adonis Litava, is by Yom Tov. But the same Machlokes by Yom Tov will apply by Shabbos as well. So, because in this respect, Shabbos and Yom Tov are not really all that different. The reason why they phrase it in terms of Yom Tov is because generally there would be a much higher demand for things on Yom Tov. Especially, again, outside of Eretz Yisrael, you had Yom Tov Sheni. There was a much higher demand for goods, either for animals or for other things. People would literally have to make these kinds of deals. Shabbos is much less. You can't cook, so, you know, a challah, a wine, some oil. But the market was not as intense, was not as busy. So the Gemara goes weiter. Massive Ravi Dibar Abin. Hashochet asapar was an interesting case. If someone shechts a cow, v'chilka, and then splits it up. V'chilka b'Rosh Hashanah. Now we'll say, when is all of this happening? This is happening on Rosh Hashanah. It's happening on Rosh Hashanah. Alright, so what happens? Im achodesh mu'ubar mishamin. Now we'll say again, what this is talking about over here is the Rosh Hashanah on Matzei Shemitah. Now, also we know that Shemitah cancels all debts. Shemitah, however, cancels debt only at the end of the Shemitah year. Okay, so on the last day of the Shemitah year is when all debts are canceled. So listen to this interesting case. So someone shechts an animal, b'chilka. So we'll say, what happens over here? You go to the butcher, right? So we go to the butcher as a group, right? And the butcher shechts the animal, giving us each a piece. Now, all of us owe the butcher, and this is happening on Rosh Hashanah, all of us owe the butcher money. There's a debt. So the Gemara says, Hashochet asapara, b'chilka b'Rosh Hashanah. So if the animal was shechted, and it was divvied up on Rosh Hashanah. Rashi points out over here, Shalmatzei Shvius l'lochin u'b'hakafa. Extended credit, so it's a loan. Most of them, whenever you extend credit, that's a loan. So what happens? If the year, im a chodesh mu'ubar, if Elul was a chodesh mu'ubar, then mishamit. Then what happens? The debt is wiped out. Why, Rabbi? Because then it turns out that the first day of Rosh Hashanah was in fact what? Was the 30th of Elul. That means that the first day of Rosh Hashanah was really the last day of the previous year, which is in the day in which all debt is wiped out. So I would not have to pay back the butcher. Vim ein v'imlav, but if the month was not a mu'uber, then ein mishamit. Then it turns out, then the first day of Rosh Hashanah was really the first day of Tishrei, and therefore again Shemitah is over and the debt is not canceled. V'ilo nitna litova. And if you're going to tell me that Yom Tov debt is not collectible, my mishamit. What does it mean that Shemitah wipes out the debt? So as you also the fact that the price says that Shemitah wipes out the debt indicates that what? That it indeed is a bona fide debt. So the Gemara says the following. My mishamit. Shiny hasam, the igale milsa dechalu. That case is different because if it turns out that what? That the previous month was a 30-day month and it turns out that the first day of Rosh Hashanah was really a weekday. Therefore, it turns out that it wasn't really a Yom Tov debt, it was a weekday debt. Tashmami Seifa. I have a look at the end of the Raisa. Imlav, if not, in a Meshamit. Meaning, if the previous month was not Mo'ober, and therefore the first day of Rosh Hashanah was in fact Rosh Hashanah, first day of Tishrei, not Elul, then the debt is not wiped out. I amrit b'shlama nitna litava. See, if you tell me that Yom Tov debt is collectible, hainu diktani in a Meshamit. That's what the Braisa means when it says that Shemitah does not wipe out the debt. Eli I amrit lo nitna litava. But if you tell me that Yom Tov debt is not collectible, amai eino mishamit. Then why would Shemitah not go ahead and wipe it out? Amai eino mishamit. Why does the Braisa need to say that it's not mishamit, to which means de'i yohivle shakil. It means that halacha lemaisa, that if I were to repay the debt, then what? Then you could accept it. The vendor could accept it. Michlal deresha, which seems to indicate to us that in the first case, we could, by inference, we say in the first case, if yohivle, if he were to pay it, lo shakil, we're not be able to accept it. To which the Gemara says, resha, sarech lemeimar le mishamit ani. In the first case, Rabbi say, where again, the Chodesh Elul was Ma'uber, and if the first day of Rosh Hashanah was really the last day of Elul, so again, even if I want to pay the butcher has to say the words, Mishametani, I forgive the debt. Seifa, lo tzarech lemeimar le mishametani. But in the Seifa, the butcher does not have to say, I forgive the debt. Kiddisnan, as the Mishnah says, Hamachzir chov b'shvias, if someone wants to repay a debt in Shemitah. Rabbi say, let's say again, Shemitah cancels the debt, but I want to repay the debt. I want to give the lender back the money. Yomar lo, the lender has to say mishametani. So the lender has to make the statement, I forgive the debt. The Amar lo afa pikein, if however the borrower says, but nevertheless I want to still pay back, yekabel mimenu. Then the lender is permitted to go ahead and accept the money. Mishum shenamar, because the pasuk says vizeh devar hashmita. Because the pasuk says, this is the word, this is the dvar, this is the matter of the Shemitah. So the Gemara learns out from there that again, the borrower, if the lender approaches the borrower to pay, the borrower has to make the definitive statement, it's okay, I am a shamit. If the lender still says, I want to give you anyway, he gives it to him, b'taras matana. Rav Avya, shakil mashkona. Rav Avya did something very interesting. We'll say now, the Gemara says, look at Rashi over here. Shakil mashkona. So what Rav Avya would do is he would take a collateral. If somebody wanted to buy something from him or take something from him on Yom Tov, he wouldn't just take a talis. He would literally take an item of value. This way, again, if we paskin that the debt is not collectible, he had an object of value in his possession that he could keep as payment for the object. Rabba Bar Ula Marim Irume. Rabba Bar Ula would use a harama. Now, what was harama? What he would do is after Yom Tov. So let's say again, Reuven came over to him on Yom Tov and took a cow, right, took a jug of wine. After Yom Tov, what he would say, Reuven, you know, could I borrow your snowblower? Right? And what would happen? He would keep the snowblower. You have this concept in halacha where if somebody owes you money and there's a concern that they're not going to pay you back, you can quote unquote borrow an object from them, and once you have it, keep it until they go ahead and pay you back. So the point that Gemara is making over here is two examples of people who were concerned about repayment of the debt and had two different ways of going about it. So the first opinion said, the first approach of Rav Avya is that he just took a real collateral. Rabba Bar Ula, for whatever reason, didn't do that. But after Yom Tov, he would quote unquote borrow an object and keep it until the debt was repaid. Weiter. V'chein Erev Pesach. Amar Rav Yochanan. Makdish Adam Pischa B'Shabbos V'Chagigasa B'Yom Tov. A person could go ahead and sanctify his Karban Pesach on Shabbos and his Chagiga on Yom Tov. He could go ahead and make it Kadosh. So the Gemara says the following. Fine. Now I will say, normally we don't, Rashi points out, we're not Makdish animals on Shabbos or Yom Tov. The reason for that is because that has a certain transactional nature, because when you're makdish something, you change the status of the object. Anytime you categorically change the status of something that has the status of a transaction, and we wouldn't normally do that on Shabbos. Neima misayele, say that the Mishnah reflects this view. V'chein erev Pesach b'Yerushalayim shechalios b'Shabbos, so too if erev Pesach in Yerushalayim fell out on Shabbos, maniach taliso eitzlo v'notales pischo v'ose imo cheshbol na'achar yom tov. So what does the Mishnah say? The Mishnah said that if erev Pesach falls out on Shabbos in Yerushalayim, what do? You take your carbon Pesach and you settle up after Yom Tov. So what do you see that's happening over here? What you see that's happening over here is that halacha lemaisa, you are being makdish the animal on Shabbos or Yom Tov, on Shabbos itself. So Gemara says, no. Hachom ha'askini, what's the case over here? B'memana acherim imo al pischo. No, the case over here is where what? Actually, I'm joining a group for Karban Pesach. And what I'm doing is the animal is already purchased. The animal is already hooked us. It's already sanctified. And what am I doing on Shabbos? I am buying in to my chabura on Shabbos. I'm joining my chabura on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, 1 second. V'ha'an antana, but we learned, Ein nimnin ala behem betchilas b'yom tov. But the Gemara says you're not really supposed to become part of a collective group for an animal on Yom Tov, whether that's to go ahead and to purchase it or become part of a chabura on Pesach. Shani hocha, the case over here is different. Why? Kevan deragil etzlo keman de'imni bebe in karadami. Because since again this is the chabura that I always join each and every year, it's considered as if what? I was part of this group already from before Shabbos. Vahatani. I was going to, we'll stop over here for today. We'll pick up right here. We'll pick up right here tomorrow.